Case number 15-1237 et al. Portland General Electric Company petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Acker for the petitioner, Portland General Electric Company. Mr. Christensen for petitioner, Patu Wind Farm. Ms. Rylander for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Lawrence Acker of the firm of Van Ness Feldman in Washington. I represent Portland General Electric Company. I'm accompanied by my colleague and partner, Gary Bachman. This is not the usual Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act case in which a party files a complaint against the State Commission for failing to observe the requirements of the Act. And FERC issues a declaratory order and then skates around the whether its declaratory order is simply a memorandum of law that has no binding effect. In this case, the complaint was filed against the public utility, Portland General, and FERC said it was operating under Section 210 of the, I'm sorry, under Section 206 and 309 of the Federal Power Act. FERC's order described requirements and told Portland General what to do. And we thought they did it defectively. They didn't satisfy any of the standards of either Sections 206 or 309. Nonetheless, we were at risk under the Federal Power Act for some pretty hefty penalties of $1 million a day for any noncompliance. Because of that, Portland General changed its practices and adjusted them. And FERC later asserted in an order that we had complied with their directives, which is not the kind of language that you would expect in a memorandum of law type order.
Wait a minute, counsel. I thought at this point you really had no beef with FERC.
Right.
Is that correct?
Well,
yes or no? I took your reply brief to say, okay, all FERC says what they did is simply a declaratory statement. It has no binding effect. And I took your reply brief to say, okay, we have no fight.
If
you have a fight with wind farm, but not with FERC.
We do have disagreements with the wind farm.
But how do we know about that? But you're talking first, so I'm asking myself, wait a minute, you don't have any fight with FERC now.
Well, as long as this court's going to affirm that FERC's orders were as ineffective as we thought they were, or that we...
Well, that's what FERC says, right?
That's what FERC says.
So that's what you don't have any fight with FERC, is that correct?
As long as you agree with FERC that their orders are of no effect, then we don't have a fight with FERC.
So why are you up first? I don't know. Why are you a petitioner at this point?
Well, we didn't know that until after they filed their brief.
Okay.
Why? Well, okay. So does that, in technical terms, does that mean you're not a party aggrieved under 313? Is that, that's what it means, right? If it's declaratory only, you're not aggrieved by the, and we don't have jurisdiction, correct?
If this is covered by the Midland line of cases, then we wouldn't be a party aggrieved.
Okay.
You wouldn't jurisdiction.
What do we do?
We don't have to even worry about jurisdiction. You don't have a claim at this point. You don't even have an argument.
As long as you believe that the court, that the FERC's order is ineffective and you say as much, then we're not agreed. With one exception, that's the FERC's order purported to apply a rule not only to Portland General, but to all other utilities.
It did?
Now, that's not us. You know, we are a utility, so we can encounter this again.
Well, that's special.
Well, it's not speculative that they announced a rule that they purported to have generally applicable.
What's the rule?
The application.
What is the rule?
37 years ago, they promulgated a rule in Order 16.
No, no, no. What's the rule that they announced in this case? The rule they announced is that a
utility can't rely on contract language approved by its state commission that restricts the delivery rights, that restricts the payment obligation to power that's actually delivered after it was scheduled. That's inconsistent with the rule that they promulgated 37 years ago after going through the requirement, satisfying the requirements of the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of having consultations with state commissions and notice and comment.
Wait a minute, counsel. Well, there's no reason for us to get into that, is there? I mean, you at this point, you have no quarrel, you said earlier, you have no quarrel with FERC. So you really, your quarrel now is with wind farm, only with wind farm, is that correct?
That's the primary quarrel that's left, yes.
Well, speaking of that, then, what do we do? Let's assume we agree with FERC that this is declaratory and it's governed by Midland. What do we do with the wind farm's argument about dynamic scheduling?
Oh, I'd reject them.
Thanks.
I would do that summarily.
But wait. But do we have jurisdiction to consider it?
We have to have jurisdiction in order to reach it.
Do we have jurisdiction to consider it?
Well, FERC dismissed
the... I'm asking you. FERC said, as I understand it, that that's just a question of state, of the power purchase agreement, right, and the state regulation. They're not going to get into that, right?
No, I didn't understand FERC to characterize it that way.
What do you think FERC said?
I understood FERC to characterize the dynamic scheduling question.
By the way, what is dynamic scheduling? Can you explain it to us?
Sure. Let's start with our contract, which says that the utility, that the wind farm has to announce what its delivery will be in advance, and do it on an hourly basis. And if the...
Is that in your contract?
Yes, yes.
The hourly basis?
Yes. It's in section 4.4
of
the contract.
So
Whatever
they do, you now have to... Portland now has to purchase all of their power, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So where does dynamic scheduling... Why do they want dynamic... I'll ask them this. Since Portland has to buy all of its power, what is dynamic scheduling... What is it, and what does it add to this?
What dynamic scheduling would do, and there are various forms of dynamic scheduling, but what dynamic scheduling would do would be to adjust the requirement that we take their power on a roughly instantaneous basis. One form of dynamic scheduling is 15-minute scheduling, and another form that is to establish...
So what I don't understand is it sounds like what dynamic scheduling means is kind of real time. It means you do it in real time.
Close to real time.
As close to real time as you can get. But what I don't understand is, if the idea behind dynamic scheduling is getting as close to real time as you can get, let's just stipulate that that's what it is.
Yes.
And there's an obligation that you take everything. What's the advantage of getting close to real time if you have to take everything anyway?
What's the advantage to them?
Yeah.
I don't see that there's
what's the disadvantage to you then?
Difference.
What's the disadvantage to you then?
The disadvantage is that we had contracted using the state-approved contract for a flat product that allows us to predict what other resources we'll be able to call on, we'll have to call on, to fill in the gaps.
This is essentially a contract dispute.
Oh, it's certainly a contract.
I thought from reading the brief that dynamic scheduling was something Portland would do to accommodate a variable source of power from a wind farm, so that since Portland had to buy it all, that when, I assume, maybe this is wrong, that what dynamic scheduling meant was that when power from Portland came to Portland, power from Patu came to Portland because the wind was blowing, that dynamic scheduling would automatically reduce the power from your other suppliers. Not true?
No, it would automatically allow for their power to be received by us. But bear in mind that dynamic scheduling is an ancillary transmission service that's provided within the Portland General system. It's not a service that's available to a party that's not a transmission customer. And Portland and Tattoo sells its entire output.
This is a little screwed up at this point, because you're really arguing in opposition to Tattoo. You're going first.
I agree.
It really is a strange situation. I wonder whether the problem is, and the way this case is now, Judge Tatel, Portland doesn't have any complaints.
Exactly. Right, I agree.
And so you're really responding to Tattoo.
Only because I was asked to, yes.
Okay, fine. Why don't we go on and hear from Tattoo, and you'll get a few minutes to respond to that.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, let's go on. And maybe, is it Mr. Christensen?
Yes, sir.
Maybe you could start by just explaining something to me. If both the Oregon Commission and FERC have ruled that Portland has to take all of the wind farm's power, what's your complaint?
So our complaint, and for the record, I'm Eric Christensen, representing Tattoo.
Right.
The complaint is that FERC has only required 15-minute scheduling. That still leaves Tattoo required to purchase wind integration services from Bonneville, which means they essentially have to schedule.
Let me just stop you for a moment. Pardon? Do they require 15 minutes, or do they offer that? I thought I was a little confused when it happened at rehearing, didn't it?
So there was a we filed a complaint to enforce these orders, asking for dynamic scheduling. FERC said 15-minute scheduling is close enough.
I thought they offered it and FERC grabbed it. Is that what it was?
Well,
is that correct?
No, the 15-minute scheduling didn't come about until after we litigated this case.
I know. But I understand. But isn't it correct that at rehearing that your opponent offered the 15-minute scheduling and the FERC said, yeah, it's fine?
Well, that's the kind of where we wound up as a bottom line.
Right.
The reason that we're here is because that doesn't.
You don't think 15 minutes is adequate.
The 15 minutes reduces the unnecessary scheduling costs, but it doesn't eliminate them.
Why do we have any jurisdiction over that? That's a question.
Because
let me finish my question. That's a question of what the state regulation means and the power purchase agreement.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. First of all, you might, but why? We independently brought a Federal Power Act claim that FERC improperly ignored in this case. We provided clear evidence that Portland General is discriminating against.
Wait. Don't go on. That's the second part of your case. My question is about the this 15-minute issue and your argument about. I take it dynamic scheduling would solve that problem for you, right?
Yes, dynamic scheduling would solve
the problem. But my question is, we only have jurisdiction, as I understand the way the statute's structured, is if the only situations under which this court would have any jurisdiction at all would be if someone is challenging, if you were challenging the Oregon PURPA regulation, which you aren't, or if this related to Portland's transmission service.
Yes.
Which it doesn't.
It does. With respect, Your Honor, I mean, Mr. Acker described dynamic scheduling as a transmission service.
Well, it can be, but in this case, Portland's not your transmission provider. Bonneville is your provider. You're a supplier of power to. In other words, FERC says, and I don't see why they're not right, that Portland's transmission services are not at issue here vis-a-vis the wind farm.
But the problem is that Portland has refused to accept dynamic scheduling, which defeats the whole process of getting the wind power from the wind farm.
But you're not. You're asking, why is this a transmission issue?
It's not.
Because
under the Federal Power Act, FERC has jurisdiction over wholesale or transmission.
Yes.
FERC has said, contrary to the Oregon Commission, this is not a transmission issue. Your argument is rather convoluted. Your argument is that Bonneville had to somehow accommodate you at Portland's instruction so that the transmission is the Bonneville transmission, so, not Portland's transmission.
Right. So I think under the Federal Power Act, and FERC just ignored the precedent here, but under the Federal Power Act, once Portland General offers dynamic scheduling, the California ISO case that we cite in our brief requires them to include that in their open access tariff. In addition, under the Federal Power Act, these are core jurisdictions.
Yeah, but they didn't.
Which is error. That's why.
Well, that's not a transmission question.
Yes, it is a transmission question, Your Honor. Those cases, the Cal ISO case, is a transmission case. And it says that, the open access transmission tariff does govern transmission service. And it's required, once they offer dynamic scheduling, that they include it, which they haven't. FERC ignored that argument, although we raised it.
That's the argument that FERC said you raised too late, right?
You raised it
in an answer to an answer.
Incorrect. We raised it in an answer to a motion.
No,
a motion
I just
to
said
dismiss.
That's what FERC said.
Well, that's what FERC said. I mean, it's an indefensible answer, but that's what they said, yes.
Mm-hmm. But if they're right about that, we have to defer to FERC's interpretation of its own procedural regulations.
Have to defer to when FERC asks you to call a motion to dismiss on the merits something that it's not.
I see. Well, that's a good point.
I mean,
the essential question, even if you raise it, is whether this is a transmission issue or not.
Yes.
And Judge Tagel points out that the statutes are a little convoluted. But don't we have to defer to FERC's determination that this is not a transmission question? And it's convoluted to try to get it through Bonneville?
There's no determination in these orders that it's not a transmission issue.
Oh, yes,
Your Honor.
In the orders they did say they disagreed with Oregon.
They disagreed with Oregon. No, Your Honor. They said that the orders here were consistent with Oregon. Oregon said this is a transmission issue. We have no jurisdiction. FERC ordered the.
Well, that's clearly wrong, isn't it?
Pardon me?
That's totally wrong, isn't it?
That what FERC said? No.
Oregon said.
Under Section 210H1 of FERC.
Can I go back to? I just don't understand. Just explain this to me.
Okay.
I don't understand how a seller of power, like the wind farm, is engaging Portland's transmission service. As I understood this, your transmission provider is Bonneville.
That's right.
And all the statutes and all the regulations, including 210H, talk about the transmission function of a utility subject to FERC regulation. So how does this relate to Portland's transmission function?
The FERC has repeatedly held even Mr. Acker said that the dynamic scheduling is a transmission service.
It can be with respect to a transmission customer, but how can it be with respect to a supplier of power? That's my only question.
How can it be with respect to a supplier of power? Well, the supplier has to move from the wind farm to the Troutdale station.
Yeah.
The problem here is that Portland has sort of built a wall around the Troutdale station by refusing to allow dynamic scheduling. If it doesn't allow dynamic scheduling, it's blocking the chosen transmission function that would allow PA2 to deliver all of its output.
So is when I asked you, I just want to make sure I understand it. When I asked you at the beginning what your problem is with FERC's order, since it's already said they have to purchase all your power, your problem, right, is that under the 15-minute scheduling thing, that if PA2 can't supply the power during that period of time when it said it has to buy it from Bonneville, right?
Yes.
That's what from your perspective, that's what the problem is, right?
That's the problem that we're trying to solve here, that dynamic scheduling would solve.
I get it.
So I understand the economic question. Your added cost here is partly the packaging cost that you have to go through at Bonneville.
Yes.
To put the now the power in the form of 15 minutes and kilowatts rather than megawatts, but kilowatts, right?
Yes.
All right. Your cost then is the packaging cost that you pay Bonneville, plus, if I understand correctly, plus what you charge Portland is a little less than your avoided costs for the power that you get from Bonneville. Is that correct?
So the avoided costs are paid by Portland. What we pay to Bonneville is the transmission costs. And
so you had to pay Bonneville to get you a little extra power put in the package.
Yes.
So now that little extra power that you put in the package, you turn around and sell to Portland with your whole with the stuff you generate yourself, right?
Right. So,
but the extra amount you charge, you can only charge market price. You can't charge.
That's what Portland pays us market price. We have to pay Bonneville whatever the price is.
But so you don't get avoided cost from Portland.
That's part of the problem.
That's part of your cost.
Right. And the other part of the problem is that if
packaging cost.
Right. Well, and there's also the problem of when the schedule is below the actual output of the product, the power just disappears into the system. It's not delivered, even though that problem would also be solved by dynamic scheduling.
Just out of curiosity, how much money are we talking about here? How much is PATU losing by having to purchase power that it turns out it can't deliver at the predicted time?
It's in the range of hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't know the exact amount, but
it's in the range of what?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Let me ask you a question, really? Counsel. Yes. Suppose the contract specifically said, as your adversary, your colleague says, suppose the contract specifically said, delivery shall be in the form of block power, kilowatts every 15 minutes. What would your position be then?
So if the contract actually said we have a specific obligation to deliver in a specific block, then we'd have to comply with the contract. That's not what the contract says.
All right. So then ultimately, this issue is a contract dispute.
No, the contract issue has already been resolved by the OPUs, the Oregon Commission. They said there's no particular requirement for transmission.
Well,
so this is a transmission dispute.
Well, wait a minute. If the contract is silent on the issue, why does Portland have an obligation?
Because
the FERC says they have an obligation to take all your power.
Under PURPA.
Under PURPA. But they don't answer the question whether or not dynamic delivery is necessary, dynamic scheduling is necessary.
That's the whole problem under the Federal Power Act part of this case. They just ignore it. And that would give us complete relief.
Well, they don't ignore it in part because they don't see you as a transmission customer.
I don't think that part of it is in the order, Your Honor.
I thought it was in the description at the beginning.
We'll have
to ask counsel.
But in any event, that's incorrect because under the established FERC precedent, the dynamic scheduling is a transmission service. They're obligated to provide it once they start providing it to their own resources. They're obligated to include it in their transmission tariff. And they're obligated to cooperate in establishing the links that are necessary to establish a dynamic schedule between Bonneville.
The final question is, FERC sees this as basically a PURPA issue, masquerading as an FPA issue. Don't we have to defer to that?
No, Your Honor. I mean, FERC has an obligation to, when we presented clear evidence of discrimination on the part of Portland General, they have an obligation to consider.
Your discrimination claim assumes you're a transmission customer.
No, Your Honor. I mean, it assumes we're taking interstate transmission, and that's all that's required.
Transmission from Portland. You're taking it from Bonneville.
It would be a transmission service from Portland to the dynamic scheduling because there has to be this essentially electronic link that allows Bonneville to move the power from our wind farm into the Portland General system. That dynamic scheduling is transmission. FERC ignored that, and that's the Federal Power Act error in this case and why you need to remand that.
Do you have any complaint about the FERPA part?
Do I have a complaint? No. The PURPA, other than the post hoc rationalization that says it's not a binding order. That's clearly rejected by the FERC itself. It said, in fact, we're ordering Portland General to take all net output from Bonneville. Those words are clearly in the order.
So where does that take you?
So that takes us to the binding order and the enforcement order that says they have to do 15-minute scheduling.
You object to the FERC not giving a tough enough order?
I don't object to FERC not giving a tough enough order. I object to FERC counsel reinventing the order, reinterpreting it to something that FERC didn't say. I mean,
do you have any complaint with FERC's order?
The complaint with FERC's order is that they ignored our evidence of discrimination under the Federal Power.
That's under the Federal Power. I'm asking whether you have a complaint about PURPA.
Not with the FERC order itself.
No, you like the PURPA part of it.
I like the PURPA part of it, absolutely.
You just want it undersold by FERC counsel.
Yes, I think the only problem we have is that FERC counsel's mischaracterized the order here as non-binding, which is just not the case.
Well, what do you do with Midland?
So Midland,
pretty... I mean, it's virtually identical to the order in Midland,
I beg to differ, Your Honor. In Midland, the orders under review there said, notice, and this is really typical, and there's dozens of FERC cases that have this same language, notice is hereby given that the Commission declines to initiate an enforcement action under Section H2A of PURPA, and it directs Midland to go to the appropriate court. There's no such language in this order, and if FERC really meant to do just... advisory order, they clearly knew how to do that.
If our opinion says it's advisory, doesn't that solve your problem?
Pardon me?
If our decision, whatever we issue, says it's only declaratory, that doesn't solve your... That's not what you want, right?
No, that's not what
you
I want.
Want a mandatory. Yes.
We want a mandatory decision, absolutely.
Even if it's... Let's assume we thought you were right, it's mandatory. I still don't see why we have any jurisdiction because it seems to me to be a PURPA order.
So under Section 210H1, this court clearly has jurisdiction because under Section 210H1 there are two tests.
One is you back to the FBA.
Right. And so that Section 210H1 says essentially if it's...
I want you to know, counsel, whether we agree with you or not, you are very inventive.
With respect, Your Honor, I think it is a direct consequence of the language in Section 210H1.
But just to be clear, the 210H1 argument was also one that was considered in Midland.
Yeah.
Your Honor, the 210H1, that was a 210H2 case.
Okay, but the language is pretty parallel between H1 and H2. In fact, I think Midland itself talked about the fact that H1 and H2 speak similarly on this issue.
I don't think Midland held that, but in any event, I disagree with the premise that the language is similar. In fact, 210H1 says if it's an order that's within FERC's Federal Power Act jurisdiction, then it's treated as a rule under the Federal Power Act and enforced in the same way, which means, among other things, that this court has jurisdiction under Section 313 and that we have the right to enforce the order under Section 317, which is what we're trying to do.
But that's basically what Midland said about H2.
Yeah. But H2 is different because that H2 has to do with the Midland, a non-regulated utilities implementation of PURPA. This is not we don't have any beef with the OPC's implementation of PURPA. What we have a beef about is the Portland General's refusal to provide dynamic scheduling transmission service.
All right, but bottom line, this contract was legitimately read as allowing Portland's position for 15 minutes and no further, then you're out of all courts, right?
No, Your Honor, because we have an independent route to dynamic scheduling through the requirements of the Federal Power Act, Order 888, and so on.
In other words, you're arguing such a contract would be illegal?
No, such a contract, I mean, I think what happened here is the contract doesn't...
No, I'm giving my hypothetical.
Okay.
Suppose the contract specifically says that all that Portland is required to do is take the power in 15-minute blocks.
If that's really what the contract said, then...
You're out of court.
In that hypothetical, what we'd do is go to FERC and say this contract is contrary to PURPA. We'd have to get a declaratory order. We'd have to go back to the U.S. District Court in Oregon to challenge
your bottom line would be if the contract said that, it would be illegal.
Yes.
I wondered why you didn't just say that right at the outset.
So I didn't follow your question very well to begin with, Your Honor. I apologize.
Right. We'll hear from the commission now. Okay.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Elizabeth Rylander for the Commission. As the Court has correctly discerned, this case does not present a transmission issue, but a PURPA issue. And FERC did, in fact, issue declaratory orders.
What about counsel's argument that dynamic scheduling is a transmission matter?
Your Honor, the transmission is beyond the scope of this case because the standard contract from Oregon does not govern it. This is a finding of the Oregon Commission, and FERC agreed with it. FERC has never previously required the use of dynamic scheduling in this context, and FERC found that it had that the case did not require it to do so here.
No, but Judge Tatel's question is dynamic scheduling a transmission question, right, which is his fundamental argument.
That's his argument. That this is a question. That when I asked him, I said, "Look, you're a seller. Portland is not your transmission provider. You're not a transmission customer." His answer is, dynamic scheduling is a transmission matter. It's part of transmission.
It's within the transmission within the transmission functions, Your Honor. Yes, but it is not, as the Court has mentioned previously. PATU is not a transmission customer of Bonneville Power, and
that's
it does
answer,
not have,
right,
a contractual relationship.
Okay. Can you tell us what dynamic scheduling is?
Dynamic scheduling is a means of real-time transmission of energy in which there.
So you just use the word transmission.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I said you just use the word transmission.
You should have used delivery.
Yes, Your Honor. That would have been a better word.
Okay.
It is a means of scheduling transmission and delivery of power.
And is it used for situations like where you have a wind farm or solar power, where the power isn't regular? Is that where it's used?
That's my understanding.
And
Your Honor,
does it affect? Is it something Portland does with its own sources of energy, in order to accommodate the wind farms?
The record suggests that Portland does use it in some contexts, Your Honor.
For its own. Do you think FERC understands? Transmission customers.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. But what FERC found here was that dynamic scheduling was not the problem highlighted by the complaint in this case, or Portland's response to it. The issue was that Portland General was not accepting all the delivery of PATU's power. Both FERC and the Oregon Commission found in their orders, FERC in the initial order at paragraph 55, JA 534. The Oregon Commission in Order 14287 at 14 JA 330 that the standard contract does not govern or restrict the means of transmission. Both commissions also noted that there may be more than one way to transmit PATU's energy, and neither commission waded into the particulars of what was most appropriate.
In other words, you ducked the question whether a dynamic scheduling was a necessary corollary to the proposition that under PURPA, Portland must take all of PATU's power.
Under PURPA, Your Honor, it's
is
not.
Is that my question?
Under PURPA, Your Honor, dynamic scheduling is not required and never has been.
But also, the contract. Do you have an interpretation of the contract?
Section 4.4 of the contract required delivery in hourly block increments. FERC found that was unacceptable and that it set up a barrier to the delivery of all of PATU's power.
I take it
that's what I thought. So where does the contract stand now?
FERC did not disturb the contract, but held that sections 1.13 and 4.1 of the contract, which govern Portland General's purchase obligation, must be read along with section 4.4 in order to require and that Portland was required to accept all of the power PATU delivered to it.
In other words, Portland the statutory provision undermined to a certain extent the notion that Portland had as to what the contract meant. But you never answered the question, how much, what do we do? We leave this for somebody else.
The facts of this case, Your Honor, are very specific, and there are any qualifying facility in a situation that like the one PATU finds itself in has recourse before FERC. Any other qualifying facility can come to FERC and say the utility has thrown up obstacles to our delivering power, and we need help removing those obstacles. In this case, FERC did find that Portland had incorrectly structured its delivery requirements to inhibit PATU's delivery of power, and in the orders challenged here, FERC found that Portland General had to accept all of PATU's power one way or another. It didn't specify what way Portland General had to do that. In the second complaint order, which is not on review here, the Commission found that that Portland General's use of 15-minute scheduling blocks and permitting delivery in kilowatt hours resolved the problems at issue here. PATU did not challenge that on rehearing and cannot appeal that finding.
I'm a little confused about that. I was trying to figure out from counsel where the 15 minutes came from.
The 15 minutes came not from the orders on review here, but from the second complaint order.
Yes, but who came up with the 15 minutes? FERC or Portland?
I believe Portland did, Your Honor.
So it's sort of an offer to resolve the issue?
I believe so. I think that's also in conjunction with a separate rule, FERC's Order 764, I believe it is, which is also not challenged here, that governs
So are you saying the second order mooted the first?
Yes, Your Honor, I think it did.
Certainly, did you make that argument in your brief?
We did argue in our brief that the events described in the second complaint order have overtaken the events in the first.
Yeah, but you didn't say moot.
We did not use the word moot, Your Honor,
no. That helps.
So
I wish I had, Your Honor.
So your position, FERC's position is, let me make sure I understand this, that that under the state's proper regulations and the PERC power purchase agreement, Portland must take all of PATU's power.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the fact that because of the 15-minute scheduling, PATU may have to go out and buy more expensive power to meet its obligations is simply a PURPA question, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But now I realize I don't think they make this argument, but isn't there a pretty fundamental and the FERC regulations permit that, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't there, the statute says in 210A that FERC is supposed to issue regulations that encourage small power production.
Yes.
And if the wind farms are losing a huge amount of money because the Portland and other purchasers are requiring them to schedule their power in these 15-minute increments, which means they got to go out and buy more expensive power, that may make this whole system unprofitable to them. So maybe there's a defect in the FERC regulation. Has anyone ever litigated that?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
What do you think about that issue?
The record does indicate here that PATU chose to sell its power to Portland General, which is a distant utility, as opposed to Bonneville Power Association or to Wasco, which is its local utility, because it could receive a higher avoided cost by doing so. So to the extent that PATU is taking on additional costs, presumably it's deemed that that's economically worthwhile.
I see.
Can I ask a question about this? So your argument at the end of the day is that we don't have jurisdiction.
Correct, Your Honor.
And so just on the text of the jurisdictional statute, so 825LB is the relevant provision?
Yes, Your Honor.
That speaks in terms of judicial review. And it says any party to a proceeding under this chapter/act, let's say act, any party to a proceeding under this act aggrieved by an order issued by the commission in such proceeding may obtain a review of such order in this court.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the part of that that's lacking is that this is not a proceeding under this act because it's a PURPA proceeding?
That's correct. FERC found that this case could be resolved entirely under PURPA and not under the Federal Power Act.
So I have two questions.
There's two separate questions here that I was confusing. One is what you regard as your jurisdiction, and the second is what is our jurisdiction. They don't necessarily correlate, do they?
They do not.
But the argument that you've made in your briefs to us is that we lack jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor.
And this is the provision that defines our jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor. Federal Power Act Section 313 does not apply to PURPA cases because of that difference you mentioned between chapter and act.
Your basic argument at the end of the day is we don't have jurisdiction because the way FERC resolved the proceeding before it, it turned out to be a PURPA proceeding, not an FPA proceeding.
Correct, Your Honor.
And it doesn't make any difference on that theory whether the FERC order was declaratory or not, right?
Not really, Your Honor, no.
Right? It makes no difference.
No, Your Honor.
Okay. I have two follow-up questions, if I could, just on this line. One is, if the party who brings the proceeding before FERC says, I've got some FPA claims, and then FERC resolves the case on PURPA grounds, the way you must be construing the statute is, it doesn't matter that the party brought it as an FPA case. All that matters is what FERC chose to do with it, and FERC chose to make it into a PURPA case, ergo, the judicial review provision doesn't apply. That's the way you read the language?
Yes, Your Honor. FERC has broad discretion to manage its own dockets, and as it understood this case, it raised only PURPA claims.
Okay, then let me ask this one follow-up question, which is under 825LA, which deals with rehearings, that says any person aggrieved by an order issued by the commission in a proceeding under this chapter, which I assume is supposed to be ACT, I don't know for sure, but I'm just going to assume that it is, can seek rehearing, can apply for rehearing.
Correct.
So if I'm just trying to square these two, if you thought under B that because FERC treated it as a PURPA proceeding, we don't have jurisdiction to review it, then wouldn't the fact that FERC treated it as a PURPA proceeding for purposes of A mean that there was no FERC jurisdiction over rehearing either?
That's an interesting question, Your Honor. I would say,
but yeah, you didn't treat it that way because you actually decided the rehearing petition.
Yes, and the issues on rehearing did include Federal Power Act arguments, and I think in that case the Commission's safest and most prudent course was to consider the rehearing arguments and evaluate them again. But for a second time on rehearing, FERC found that the issue was not Federal Power Act related, but PURPA related.
So do you understand my question, which is that if as you say, FERC thought that it was PURPA related and not FPA related, and that means for B, we don't have jurisdiction, why doesn't it mean for A that FERC doesn't have jurisdiction over a rehearing petition?
So if I understand your question, Your Honor, are you asking why FERC issued a rehearing order in the first place?
Right, because if I'm understanding the way you read B, that means we don't have jurisdiction because you treated it as a PURPA proceeding.
Yes, Your Honor.
Then wouldn't the logical consequence of that also be that FERC didn't have jurisdiction over the rehearing petition?
FERC did not interpret it that way, but I understand your argument.
Uh-huh.
I can't say exactly why FERC did not see it that way, but FERC did not.
I'm a little puzzled about the jurisdictional argument here. When we ask whether a party is aggrieved, we assume the merits of their argument, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
You all aggrieved as a form of standing, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. The merits of Wind Farm's position is that this was an FPA problem because there was discrimination in transmission.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why would we not have jurisdiction over that question?
The court would
have... I mean, you could have done it right, but why wouldn't we have jurisdiction?
The court does have jurisdiction over questions purely of the Federal Power Act, as Your Honor is saying, but in this case, FERC viewed this case through the lens of PURPA.
You may have legitimately decided the question, using the statutes back and forth, and concluded this is basically a PURPA case. That But I'm just going to the jurisdictional issue. I don't see why Petitioner Wind Farm doesn't have jurisdiction in this court, because all the question is whether they're aggrieved. And their argument is that FERC illegally, improperly, ignored the FPA issue because it's a transmission question and there's been discrimination in transmission. If that were true, wouldn't it be clear that we have standing? I mean, that we have jurisdiction?
Yes, Your Honor.
But then I assume your position is, I'm glad you asked it that way, because I was going to ask you, if you were to prevail here, would the first sentence of our opinion say, we lack jurisdiction because the order was declaratory, or we lack jurisdiction because this is a PURPA case? And I take it in response to Judge Silverman's question, your answer is to say the latter, right?
We lack jurisdiction because this is a PURPA issue,
right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So all that stuff in your brief about this being declaratory only, we should ignore that. It doesn't really affect our jurisdictional issue, right?
No, Your Honor. But
Wait. I thought it did, because I thought that your point. There's two ways. There's Midland dealt with this. There's two theories under which we have jurisdiction. One is to say that it's a proceeding under this act aggrieved by an order. And the answer to that is it's not a proceeding under this act because we treat it as a PURPA proceeding. But then there's another route, which is to say, well, under 210H, the fact that it's a PURPA proceeding doesn't answer it because it converts everything that's PURPA into an FPA. As to that, you go to declaratory because you say, wait a minute, it's got to be an enforcement. And it's not an enforcement for H purposes, because it's declaratory, we're not doing all the stuff we normally do in an enforcement proceeding. Therefore, you don't get around under the 210H route either. Am I not understanding correctly?
Okay, that is correct, Your Honor. I think I am misunderstanding the line of questioning here. So as this court laid out in Midland, Section 313 of the Federal Power Act does not give the court jurisdiction over matters arising under purpose Section 210H because of the way 313 is structured. So the PATU cannot try to string together a theory under which there is jurisdiction under Section Federal Power Act Section 313 because the Commission mentions Section 210H.
In other words, it's not just because 210H speaks in terms of PURPA issues being FPA issues. I'm speaking in general terms.
That's correct.
That's not enough to give jurisdiction under 825L.
Section 313 of the Federal Power Act does not confer jurisdiction in that situation.
But in any
circumstance, the Commission's orders here were not attempting to enforce any rule, but just to state FERC's views on the dispute at hand. The court also lacks jurisdiction when FERC is not attempting to enforce a rule.
What do you think about Mr. Christensen's argument that the order here is different from Midland, and that this one is, in fact, that the council has mischaracterized, that this rule, unlike Midland, is, in fact, mandatory?
I don't understand his argument that this order is mandatory, Your Honor. Just as in Midland, FERC did not provide any specific guidance as to how Portland General was to comply with the order. It did not specify a deadline for compliance or impose any consequences of not complying. And certainly FERC did not require that the parties follow up on the order, for example, by making a compliance filing.
Did you, in the reconsideration order, this was really specifically say 15 minutes complied with the PURPA obligation?
That was in the second complaint order, Your Honor, which is not on review here, and for which PATU did not seek rehearing. So that finding is FERC. Yes, FERC did make that finding. That finding is not on review here.
I know it's not on review, but that goes back to the question of whether or not the issue that the case before us is moot.
I would say the issue is moot, Your Honor. And moreover, PATU has taken the FERC's two orders. Yes, Your Honor. PATU has taken FERC's two orders, the same ones for which it has sought review here, and is attempting to enforce them in federal district court in Oregon.
Well, why would they want to enforce an order of FERC's that says 15 minutes is okay? Because that's what Portland is offering now, and that's what they're doing. I don't get it.
Yeah, well, is Portland not complying? I thought counsel for Portland said they are taking all of Patu's power.
Yes, Your
Honor. So then why is Patu in court trying to enforce an order that the other side is obeying?
Respectfully, Your Honor, respectfully, Judge Tatel, I think that question is better posed to Patu, okay. But my own reading of it is that the orders are not that bad.
Okay. Unrelated, but maybe related question. With respect to Patu's claim about discrimination and violating the standards of conduct, FERC's order addresses both of those on the merits, right? They say it's not discriminatory, correct?
That's right, Your Honor.
If it's not a transmission customer, why did FERC address? Shouldn't FERC have said we just don't have jurisdiction over this?
FERC would have had that option, but
if it doesn't have jurisdiction, it doesn't have jurisdiction. It, like us, it can't decide a case over which it has no jurisdiction. If Patu is not a transmission customer, shouldn't FERC have simply said petition dismissed? We don't have jurisdiction.
FERC had that option, Your Honor, but it chose to provide an advisory opinion saying that we don't think it's a transmission customer and we do not see any violation of the standards of conduct here.
I see. So that part of it was also advisory. Why does FERC do that? Isn't FERC busy enough so it doesn't have to? Why is it issuing all these advisory opinions in mandatory terms? I mean, it's totally bizarre the way they're doing it. If they're declaratory, why don't they say they're declaratory instead of writing them as mandatory? And I know you're not at FERC. You're the lawyer, so maybe you don't know the answer to this. But even more fundamentally, why are they issuing these advisory opinions? I don't get it. What's the reason for that?
In the PURPA H1 and H2, mm-hmm. 210 H1 and 210 H2 setting, Your Honor, parties do sometimes take FERC's FERC's advisory opinions to district court, which is another reason this court does not have jurisdiction. Once the commission has provided its opinion, then that would mean that this court was simultaneously reviewing FERC's position at the same time a district court was considering it.
Can I ask this question though to follow up on Judge Shale's question? So, if FERC did provide, let's say, advisory guidance on the standards of performance discrimination claim, that's a claim under the FPA.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if that's a claim under the FPA, then getting back to our jurisdiction, the statute says any party to a proceeding under this act meaning the FPA, can bring a petition for judicial review before us.
Yes, Your Honor.
So why isn't there jurisdiction for us to review FERC's order, given that FERC did pronounce on an FPA issue?
Again, Your Honor, although there were FPA Federal Power Act questions raised in this case, the Commission chose to view it solely through the lens of FERPA. There was
as to the standards of performance, that if that's not a PURPA answer, that's an FPA answer, that there's not discrimination. I didn't understand. Am I wrong?
There is not discrimination, and part of the reason for that is that Patu is not Portland General's transmission customer.
Well,
That's why,
aren't I right that it, so FERC's declaratory ruling on discrimination was this would not be discrimination if Patu were a transmission customer, right? Because
if it's not
a transmission customer, then this anti-discrimination provision in the statute doesn't apply, does it?
That's right.
It's not applicable. Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, it doesn't apply? Huh?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm a little confused by the question.
I'm looking for the statute.
Do you know are you familiar with the Abbott and Costello routine, who's on first?
Yes, Your Honor, I am.
It's awful close.
I think that Judge Tatel's question is if the answer to the transmission issue that we started off with early on in the argument is that Bonneville intercedes, and so therefore that makes Patu not part of the transmission apparatus, then why are we even talking about anti-discrimination vis-a-vis PATU?
Under FDA.
Wouldn't that also be an answer to that, to the discrimination part? Wouldn't it also take PATU outside of the field of potential discrimination claimants, too? I thought that was the question that Judge
My
Taylor,
question is, Section 205 says can't discriminate with respect to transmission or sale of electricity subject to federal jurisdiction. Transmission or sale of electric energy subject to transmission. That's not this case, right? This isn't transmission. It's not a sale.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay, this is not a transmission case.
Okay,
then
FERC
parties
has no jurisdiction under the what FERC should have said with respect to PATU's complaint is dismissed because we don't have jurisdiction under 205. It's not a transmission or sale of electric energy subject to commission jurisdiction, right? I mean, you still win your case, but isn't that what FERC should have done? If it isn't, then I don't understand what's happening here.
FERC could have chosen to do that, Your Honor, yes. Mm-hmm.
But FERC did suggest in its opinion that it was not a PATU was not a transmission customer.
FERC did find that PATU was not a transmission customer.
Well,
it
didn't take the next logical step and say, since it's not a transmission customer, this is not a transmission case, therefore we don't have jurisdiction under FBA.
FERC could have chosen to do that, Your Honor, yes.
Where did it say that PATU is not a transmission customer?
That is in both the complaint order at paragraph 56, JA 651 to 52, and the rehearing order, paragraphs 57 to 59, JA 652 to 53.
Okay.
If the court has no further questions, we'll be happy to rest on a brief.
She said there were no further questions.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was entertaining a question from Judge Silberman.
I thought you were asking me the question.
If the court has
anything else?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Did counsel have any time left? Okay. You can take 2 minutes, Mr. Christensen.
Actually.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah. And thank you for your consideration. Well, now that this is all perfectly clear.
Yeah. Right.
Let me see if I can provide a little bit of background information and context. That the contract that was entered into between PATU and Portland General wasn't a contract of Portland General's manufacture. It was the state-approved PURPA contract was the standard contract. And
right.
The state had a provision that said, if your operational needs, or if your commercial needs, or if your sense of preferences urges you as the wind farm to want different terms and conditions, you have that right, and we will supervise the negotiations to make it a non-standard contract. We wouldn't have had to have in the standard contract any other kinds of scheduling provisions than the one that already was present, which was we'll purchase your deliveries after you pre-schedule them. So
that's specifically in the contract.
Yes, that's what Section 4.4.
That's
their standard
contract, right?
That's the standard
which
contract.
The state has approved.
Excuse me.
Which the state utility commission has approved.
The state approved back. I think it was back in 2007, three or four years before the contract was signed.
But so then, isn't your complaint? Like, I hear what you said about the problem with the wind farm being required under the standard contract to purchase more expensive power to meet its delivery obligations because of this 15-minute thing, right? I get that. But since isn't your complaint then that the FERC regulation, by tolerating that, itself violates 210A because it discourages the production of this power? In other words, your complaint is with the regulation which allows it.
Wait a minute. You're
but this is Portland's counsel.
No, that's the other side's complaint, not it.
The FERC regulation and the contract permit Portland to impose this 15-minute obligation on you, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's why I asked.
I'm sorry, the 15-minute isn't
your complaint with respect to the FERC regulation that doesn't prohibit that? In other words, your argument should be that, look, FERC, you're discouraging the production of this alternative energy.
That might be my argument if I was arguing for the wind farm, but that's not what I'm arguing for.
I'm totally sorry.
I'm the utility. I'm a good guy in this case.
I'm sorry.
No, no, you're the bad guy.
I'm sorry. Well, if I was asking the question to the right person, what would his answer be?
My suspicion is his answer would be
honest
but wrong.
I'm completely sorry. I get it. Okay.
The other feature of this is and I think it's something.
What about the mootness question? Why didn't you get up and say this case is moot? FERC has said in their reconsideration that 15 minutes is fine.
Because there's uncertainty about whether the FERC's order actually was intended to be an effective order or whether it wasn't. But as long as that's why I said
whether it's effective or not, their final position is one you're happy with.
As long as you accept that final position,
not even in front of us. But maybe the case is moot because of that. That's what's puzzling me.
It may have become moot. But
why doesn't anybody say it's
moot? We had to change our behavior because they wrote their
order. Counsel, why doesn't anybody say the case is moot because there's been a separate proceeding in which FERC has said 15 minutes is fine, that satisfies the obligation to take all of wind farms' profit?
Because we had to change our billing practices and our payment practices in order to achieve that result. That's not the result we wanted.
Yeah, but you're happy.
I'm not at all happy with it.
Well, wait a minute. Are you challenging it?
The FERC said that we were in compliance with their directives. It was not a matter of
counsel,
us.
Counsel, you're not objecting to their 15-minute order because you yourself had offered it. Is that correct?
We offered it as a result of what we thought was their compulsion, not as a voluntary act.
Let me ask this. And for purposes of this proceeding, you're happy with FERC's treating the orders that we're now reviewing as declaratory only?
We're content with that.
You're content with that. But is what you're saying that you wouldn't, had you known that at the time of the 15-minute order, in the second complaint that's not before us right now, that you would have acted differently in that case? Had you known that the orders in this case are only declaratory?
Yes. The only reason that we went to this 15-minute schedule and this change of billing practices was because we were trying to conform to what FERC characterized as its directives to avoid the penalty of $1 million a day for not complying.
So you acted the way you did in the second proceeding that resulted in the 15-minute order because you felt like you were under compulsion under these orders. Now that you've been educated and realize that FERC believes that these are not compulsory but they are declaratory, then you're saying you would have acted differently in the 15-minute proceeding? Is that?
We probably would have acted differently. We may yet act differently.
Well, why? Because I thought that order is final now. Nobody sought review, right?
No, nobody sought review, but the only reason we acted that way was because we thought these orders were mandatory.
Yeah. I see. But now that you realize they're declaratory, you now have the question whether you want to agree to the 15 minutes or not.
Precisely.
But whatever you do with respect to the 15-minute, you are obligated, correct? Portland is obligated to purchase all their power, right?
We are obligated to purchase under the contract all of the power that they deliver pursuant to an hourly schedule. And that, they rely
when you say pursuant to an hourly schedule, right, that just goes right back to your original argument that 4.4 trumps everything else,
that's what the State Commission found, that was the governing provision, and then FERC got involved in interpreting the state-approved contract.
I think your chances of getting out of the 15 minutes are vanishingly small.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay, let's hear from Mr. Christensen so I can ask him my question instead of to you.
Thank you for your consideration.
So, Mr. Christensen, you can have 2 minutes, too.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me address, first of all, the transmission customer question.
We'll get around to my question, eventually. Go ahead. You can talk about transmission. That's
okay,
fine.
Let me talk about transmission customer first, and then I'll try to answer your question.
Yeah.
But you'll have to remind me because I kind of lost the thread there.
Okay,
so transmission customer,
in
fact, Patu applied, requested transmission service, requested dynamic scheduling service from Portland General. They were refused.
You requested dynamic scheduling, correct?
Which
you
is...
You didn't request... transmission service.
It is transmission service. The Cal ISO...
No one in this courtroom has so far been able to explain to me what... Maybe if you could explain to me what dynamic scheduling is.
So dynamic scheduling... Dynamic scheduling is a computerized system that allows the power to be delivered as it's produced from the wind farm across the Portland General system to the... Or across the Bonneville system, to the Portland General system on a real-time basis.
Right. So it allows you... to supply power to Portland General on a real-time basis.
Yes.
That's not a transmission function.
Yes, it is. I beg to differ, Your Honor. And the Cal ISO case that's cited on page 28 of our brief holds that directly. It says the details about dynamic scheduling contained in the standards are practices that may affect the terms and conditions of transmission service significantly, and therefore, under the Commission's rule of reason, must be filed
and
under Section 205 of the FDA.
Who are the parties in that case?
The Cal ISO, the California ISO, which serves is the transmission entity serving California.
Right.
Even if you
were
right, that's Bonneville that's doing the transmission.
Yeah, right.
It's Portland General. In this case, the California ISO is the receiving balancing authority, the same as Portland General is the receiving balancing authority.
Right. Okay.
And in any event, the transmission customer definition in FERC's regulation says any eligible transmission customer, even a person who's only just seeking information about transmission. It doesn't say you have to be a transmission customer of a particular utility in order to receive the protections of the Federal Power Act. In fact, it says just the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. Any transmission customer, it prohibits discrimination against any eligible transmission customer. It doesn't matter, and it has to read that way, because otherwise what the result of this case is that Portland General's merchant function can basically build a wall around their service territory and defeat all competition in the wholesale power market. And that's the whole point of Order 888. In addition, I think the FERC abused its discretion by ignoring our Federal Power Act claims. That gives this court jurisdiction under Section 313, regardless of how the
you mean discrimination?
Yes.
Well, but that all turns on whether, if you are, in fact, a transmission customer, you're right. Well, they didn't ignore them. They decided the discrimination issue against you.
Right, and
but
they abused their
the
discretion
question
in doing
is, should
so.
They have decided it at all, since if Patu is not a transmission customer?
Patu is a transmission customer.
So we're right back to where we were.
Yes.
So what about my question? Isn't your complaint really with the FERC regulation that allows Portland to impose this 15-minute obligation on you?
Our complaint is
that's
with,
what your complaint really is, what isn't it?
With the
should yeah.
I'm sorry. The well, we have two complaints. One is that
I'm
we're
not
entitled
to complaint. I'm not talking about your complaint in this case.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm saying your real complaint, it seems to me, is that FERC's regulations tolerate or don't prohibit these 15-minute requirements because those. Have the opposite effect of, quote, encouraging the delivery of this kind of alternative energy. Isn't that right?
Our complaint with Portland General is that
I'm asking you, it's like a hypothetical question.
Okay.
I mean, is it, as I understand your complaint here, I don't mean complaint in terms of the document.
Yes.
Your Patu's basic problem here is it has to buy more expensive power to meet the 15-minute obligation of the contract,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And my only question is, that sounds to me like your problem is with the FERC regulation that tolerates that. And what you should be doing is going to FERC and saying, this regulation is inconsistent with 210A because it does not, quote, encourage the development and delivery of this alternative energy.
In fact,
it puts a big disincentive on it.
Well, in fact, that's basically the PURPA part of our complaint was basically that. But also,
but you're
under
not making
the
argument here.
The FERC regulations under the Federal Power Act and Order 888 specifically require dynamic scheduling to be included in the OAT. And so we would have had, if FERC had not abused its discretion in this case, we would have been able to reach dynamic scheduling through the Federal Power Act route.
Anything else?
No.
Thank you. Case is submitted.